Hi, and good afternoon. My name is Mike Gibb, and I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm very excited to bring you today's webinar on a core skill set that's important to every successful collection agency, how to train and retrain your employees. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Peak Revenue Group. Allow me a brief moment to say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AR.net is the industry's largest network of professionals in the collections and debt buying industries. Since 2008, AccountsRecovery.net has sought to deliver the highest quality news and information via a networking platform that allows members to communicate and interact with one another in ways that they are not able to do anywhere else. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. Before we begin today's event, I wanted to invite Christopher Rickman from Peak Revenue Group to tell you a little bit about his company. I've had a number of interactions with Chris over the years I've known him, and I truly appreciate the comprehensive approach he's brought to his platform. Chris, please, why don't you take a minute and say a few words?
Thank you, Mike, and hello, everyone. I am grateful for the opportunity to sponsor today's webinar. Mike company provides KnowledgeLink. That's a web-based employee education and compliance training application for companies in the collection industry. KnowledgeLink is used by our clients to simplify and lower the cost of training new and existing employees. Our clients are companies that want to build and maintain a high level of assurance their staff members have mastered and are maintaining their mastery of knowledge expected of them when they're interacting with consumers. KnowledgeLink automatically builds documentation of the compliance training efforts of the company for existing and prospective clients and for regulators. For those of you I don't know or haven't met, I've spent most of my career on your side of the desk. I've worked in the collection industry for more than 30 years, most of that time in an executive management position in a collection firm. KnowledgeLink was created to address many of the shortcomings in training and compliance that I saw as COO and CEO of my firm. You can use KnowledgeLink to implement an ongoing continuous training cycle, reinforcing the knowledge you expect staff members to have before it begins to fade from memory. Present collection, client, or even company policies to your staff members during onboarding training or at ongoing recurring schedules where they acknowledge they have read and understand those policies. You can present tests during training events to validate learning or and on recurring schedules where you can certify staff knowledge in areas you wish, for example, in the FDCPA or HIPAA. You can use KnowledgeLink during training events to present videos or slideshows followed by a set of questions that validate participation and learning. In summary, KnowledgeLink will close knowledge gaps, promote accountability, lower the cost of training, document for prospective and existing clients, regulators, or auditors your company's proactive role in preventing compliance nonconformities. You can find out more at peakrevenuegroup.com. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chris. Now, allow me 2 seconds to introduce you to today's speakers. LaDonna Bowling started out in the industry in 1984, working first-party collections. She then worked in Economic Support Department for Welfare Department for 11 years in Georgia. In 1996, she joined Contract Callers as manager of the Utility Collections Portfolio. She then became a trainer for the agency, training all collection staff and created their staff development program. Her work with the welfare department brought a unique flavor to the agency's collections processes. Her mission in the agency was to change the mindset of the collection staff to treat consumers with dignity and respect, showing them that you can be successful as a collector using consumer-friendly methods. She's currently serving as director of call center operations with Contract Callers. LaDonna is very active with the Georgia Collectors Association and has served on their board of directors since 2010. Mike Hiller is the Vice President of Collections for American Profit Recovery. He joined APR more than a decade ago as an entry-level employee. He is a licensed collection manager in Michigan and serves as a subject matter expert for the Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs. Roger Weiss is the Chief Operating Officer of CACI, and also runs the Collections Coach. Roger has been involved in the collections industry since 1992 and is a frequent speaker at events and conferences. I want to offer my sincerest gratitude and appreciation to Mike, LaDonna, and Roger for sharing their insights today. The format for today's webinar will be a discussion moderated by me. There is no video or PowerPoint component to today's conversation. We encourage you to submit questions via the Zoom webinar control panel, and we will get to them when the discussion is concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your webinar control panel. And with that, let me begin today's discussion. And Mike, let me start with you first. Let's talk about what skills or personality traits make up the best trainers. Can you talk about the attributes, skill sets, or the styles that do so?
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, and for those trainers who are on the call with us, I hope you really enjoy this next part. But we're really talking about, attributes and skills primarily. Trainers are teachers and trainers are coaches. Great trainers are great leaders, period. It's funny, my wife is a vice principal in a high school, and we joke that, when she's looking to hire a teacher and I'm looking to hire a trainer, we're looking for the same candidate. They have the same attributes. So I'll start there. When it comes to attributes, your best trainers are going to be charismatic. They're going to be knowledgeable. They're going to be patient. And above all, they're going to be passionate. And then as a corollary to that, as far as their skill sets are concerned, they're going to be good listeners, good communicators. They're going to be able to engage an audience. Entertaining is good. Monotone and dry is utterly forgettable, is what I like to say. You're looking for orators, lastly. You're looking for someone who's a good storyteller. And stories, after all, are the window into your company's culture. So you don't want to overuse anecdotes, but storytelling is very, very valuable. So you're looking for someone who's able to command that. And I'll end with this, and that's to say that it's no coincidence that the same trainers produce quality collectors time and time again. And it's no coincidence that the same managers promote quality trainers and supervisors time and time again.
Yeah, and this is LaDonna. Let me add to that. Those are very good points. Training is not a passive sport. And your trainers should have energy and enthusiasm and get folks excited over the agenda. And you're probably thinking to yourself, well, you can only make FDCPA, FCRA, and all those types of things, so exciting. But, just like Mike had mentioned, through storytelling and such, you can get folks excited over learning those things.
Even if they're cautionary tales, even if they're stories what not to do.
Exactly. Those are always good ones, especially when you're telling folks, why our industry has such a bad rep, from the ancient days, those old stories, the horror stories. And then you see their heads nodding and such. And, good trainers have to be able to work well with others and maintain flexibility and know their audience. Because, if we have a training class of 20 new hires, we're looking for the same attributes with most of our collectors, but you get folks different styles. You get different adults. You get the millennials. We have some baby boomers. We have some Gen Xers in our current class. And so our trainers having to adapt to know how to reach all of those generations that are, coming into our workplace. So they have to be very flexible with that.
You talk about being good storytellers, and Mike, you mentioned it, so I'll ask this to you. Is there what types of stories? I mean, are there particular types of stories you're looking for them to be able to tell, or is it basically just, if you can tell a good story about anything, really?
Yeah, it's more of the latter. In my approximation, it's someone who's, you know, great at conveying information in a way that's memorable for people. And stories are a great way to make sure that it's memorable. Because let's face it, you know, we watch television shows and movies because we can relate to something. You know, it strikes an emotional cue with us, and that's what stories do. They strike an emotional cue, so there's that connection where you're almost passively committing it to memory.
Now, LaDonna, let me ask you this. Are you looking for, when you say stories, are you looking for actual sort of real world experiences, like things that actually happened on the collection floor? Or are you just looking for ways that you can sort of take a lesson and sort of frame it in the form of a story?
Both. Because, you know, there are enough real stories, you know, in our industry to where you can make it interesting and people can associate with that and say, yes, that really happened. And no, they're not working in this industry anymore. Or yes, you know, they moved on and now they're vice president of another agency. So, you know, we use real stories and then, you know, liken some of the stories that we tell to real life situations and such when they're doing the storytelling part. And again, you know, the trainer has to be animated and draw people in when they're in the storytelling part and make folks want to listen to them. You know, is that the person that reads the Three Little Pigs like, I'll huff and puff and blow your house down? Or are they like, you know, I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow your house down? Yeah, that's what you're looking for as far as enthusiasm and the ability to draw the crowd and all eyes on them and buying into what they're saying.
Mike, you talked a little bit about, you know, sort of the, you know, with your wife and vice principals and teachers and trainers. You know, can you talk a little bit about the recruitment and selection process? You know, where are you looking for a trainer?
Absolutely. Yeah. So again, I think recruitment and selection is really where the training begins. So maybe your trainers are involved with the selection process. Maybe they're not. Maybe it's just the managers. But I do wholeheartedly believe that that's where it starts. You know, who are you looking for in a new hire? You know, what expectations are you setting with someone who's a new employee? You know, do you use realistic job previews? Do you have paid training? Do you convey that? Do you explain ramp up time? You know, how are you making sure that you're hiring the right people, and how much are you willing to pay to find out? You know, Zappos is a great example of this. You know, they offer a 4-week training program, and after the first week, they offer something like $3,000, which has probably gone up since the last I looked, but they're willing to offer this to anyone who's willing to quit. And the idea being is, you know, anyone willing to take the money and walk is the wrong person for the job. So they know how much they're willing to pay to find out. So, you know, long before, you know, a candidate ever becomes an employee, you screen them, right? You know their personality, maybe. You know their aptitudes, their education, their experience. But I would question, how much do you know about their learning style? Are they visual learners? Are they auditory learners? Are they kinesthetic learners, so hands-on learners? And it's not to say that you need to know that before you hire someone, but it's very important to know how best to train the people that you have hired. And then getting back to the psychometrics, so the personality and aptitudes and such, you know, there's a lot of great resources out there. You know, there's a lot of personality traits that correlate well with success on the job. Internal locus of control is one. Conscientiousness is another. G score is another, which is basically IQ. But they're all measurable. They're all testable. You can use them in your screening process. They're all tied to performance across all industries. So those are great tools, too. The only thing I would question as far as psychometrics are concerned in the recruitment and selection is avoid misusing testing tools just because they're popular. You know, we've seen companies use the DISC inventory, which a lot of people have probably heard of, So the dominance, you know, inducement, submission, and compliance. They use it as a screening tool, but the DISC was designed as a development tool. So get involved with some of those things if you're not, but just be careful not to misuse tools, you know, in situations where they're not really meant for. And then lastly, I would say experience versus no experience. And it doesn't really matter to me where you fall on the end of each spectrum, right? With the some companies on one end saying they're not going to hire anyone with collection experience ever. There's too many bad habits and too much to break. And the other end of the spectrum is, yeah, of course we're going to hire people with experience. They've, you know, hit the ground running. So regardless of where you're at on that spectrum, I would just say consider it. Make sure you have something in mind with regards to how much experience or if people have experience in collections. Because I can tell you from my own experience, I've sat down in interviews and the candidate says, you know, 2 minutes into the interview, just show me the phone and I'll show you what I can do. Well, you're not going to fit in here. You know, that's not what we do. That's not the type of person I'm looking for. I'm looking for someone who is a readiness to learn, you know, excited about learning this job from the ground up, not someone who says they know everything already and, you know, just kind of show me to where I need to start collecting, then I'll do the rest.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, you hear the folks who say they've been burned because they hired the people with the tons of collection experience and, you know, we've all done that. They bring the bad habits, but, you know, a lot of times those habits can be changed, you know, through constant reinforcement by the agency, by the workplace and its culture, so to speak. And then the folks with no experience, we've actually got our best collectors from, you know, people who had no experience or maybe just a little bit of an exposure to a call center environment. And they come in and they do well, but they have that, you know, open willingness to learn, you know, mindset. And, you know, we've used a few personality tests or charts, if you will, to try to find, you know, the person that's got the right KSA, the knowledge, skills, and ability, you know, to do the job. And then, you know, we teach them what they need to know to do the job. But if they come in with that can-do, willing-to-learn mindset, then they do make a good ideal candidate, and if they're, you know, if they can articulate well, no mumblers.
Are you looking for, LaDonna, are you looking for when you're hiring a trainer, let's talk about this experience first. So do you want someone who's kind of come in, who's got some experience in collections, or is it more important to you to kind of, that they're a better sort of leader slash trainer, and then you can kind of teach them what they have to train?
Either or, it makes no difference. We were successful. We hired a lady who had some experience in a first party situation, training with one of our utility clients. And when I interviewed her, you know, she spoke the talk. She knew everything about training folks, and it really didn't matter because, you know, if you know how to reach people, convey information, and have them communicate back to you that they heard what you said and they understood it, you know, at the end of the day, to me, that's what makes a good trainer. And she, you know, acclimated well to our environment, you know, went from a first party to a third party. So that was an example of someone who didn't have the collection experience, and but she had the customer service skills, and she was very good at teaching that. And then, you know, once she, you know, got in and learned FDCPA and all the things that, you know, impact us in the collection part, you know, she did very well with that, but she had those basic essential skills of being able to train to begin with. And, you know, not everybody has that. You know, like, I'm a firm believer that your best student doesn't necessarily make to be the best teacher. You know, I think that the folks who, maybe struggle a little bit with understanding and interpreting, they're better at teaching and explaining things because they can reach a bigger segment of the population, because, you know, we're not hiring, you know, everybody that we hire doesn't have an IQ of, you know, 140 or above. You know, we have folks on different levels, and I'm a firm believer that the person who struggles a little bit to get the information, is very good at teaching other folks how to get the information. With teaching. But
got it. So I'm just catching up with my notes. So we've talked a little bit. We set the stage in terms of what the what works best, or what to look for with when it comes to the trainers. Let's let's take a slight change of topic and talk about when you're what you do or the process or the program. Let's talk about new hires first. And Mike, I'll ask you, what are the core components that should be part of any training program for new employees?
So I would say the most important thing is to actually have a program. And I know that's something that hopefully many of us are taking for granted, and I realize its size and scope, but it shouldn't be, Ned, who's been here 20 years, it's all upstairs, and he just tells everyone what they need to know. It should be an actual program laid out. I'm reminded of Zig Ziglar. He's famous for quite a few quotes, but the one that sticks in my mind is this, where he says, the only thing worse than training employees and losing them is to not train them and keep them. So having a program is important. But as far as what's in that program, I'm delighted to hear LaDonna talk about KSA's knowledge, skills, and abilities. I'll add two more: knowledge, skills, abilities, attitudes, and culture. And I think the 100-mile view of a training program includes these categories: knowledge, skills, abilities, attitudes, and culture. And that's what's going to result in improved performance on the job, in my approximation. So if you drill down into some of these, and I can go through as deep or as wide as you want, but really, knowledge, you're talking about federal law, state law, regulatory compliance, company policies and procedures. And then if you drill down deeper into federal laws, you have FDCPA, et cetera, et cetera. Regulatory compliance, you drill down into that, and you have the CFPB and UDAP, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You can drill down as deep as you want, but I think knowledge, in my mind, would include those laws and those regulatory bodies, as well as your own company policies and procedures. And then as far as skills and abilities go, I kind of lump those together. They're both behavioral. They're both technical skills that you need to train for. Some more intuitive than others. But if you drill down into the skills and abilities, you're going to see, effective communication. You're going to see the training of negotiation techniques, and you're going to see the training of technology. So your software, some of the more, where art and science kind of coalesce, right? Negotiating techniques is more of an art, where learning, your particular collection software, skip tracing software, or your phones, or, if you're using Mac dialers or Excel, that would be more on the technical science side of things. But I would lump all that into technology and skills and abilities and negotiating and communicating. And, thirdly, I would say attitude. And, we say attitude is everything. And if you ask any college sports coach, maybe ask Coach K, Krzyzewski, or in light of what happened this week, Coach Orima at UConn. But I don't think they would disagree that attitude is everything. And underneath the umbrella, the categories of attitude, I would say, is confidence and professionalism and phone etiquette. Maybe you use scripts, maybe you don't. It's a great way to be able to train individuals on, their initial contact or second or tertiary contacts, disputes, complaint calls, et cetera, would all fall under the grouping of attitude. And then lastly, company culture. For a new hire to be successful, they need to join your culture, whatever culture that is, they need to join your culture. So the question is, how do you train culture? We kind of alluded to it earlier. You tell stories. Again, you know, stories are that window into your company's culture. And in this sense, it can be for training purposes, but it can also be for, you know, what are people like in the office? You know, do you have an employee week once a year you dedicate to your employees? Do you dunk your manager in a dunk tank? You know, is anybody volunteering to have their head shaved or to jump in the polar bear plunge? You know, is that the type of culture you have? Then great. Then tell stories about those things. Are you big into charities and you have a bunch of charity events that your company participates in electively? Tell those stories.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And we hone in on the cultural aspect of our work here to get the new hire involved and getting excited, you know, about working for a place that, you know, does such great things or fun things, or that's what their philosophy is, and they buy into our philosophies, and we instill that right at the beginning over, you know, what our culture is like here. And we see, because we're in a call center town, and I say that because there's about four other call centers here that are doing some, you know, first party work, some third party work, etc. And you know, I think that, you know, you spend 6 months with one, 2 years with another, and your eyes kind of glaze over. So, you know, we like to have that unique culture that, you know, people feel at home when they come here and want to be a part of it and grow with it.
Hi, everyone. This is Roger Weiss. I apologize for joining so late. I have a couple thoughts on that. Mike and LaDonna have both given some great information there. The things that I focus a little bit differently on, and I don't disagree with anything they said, I would say on top of it, if you could slather on a couple more layers, would be somewhat of communication psychology. A lot of you know I study a lot of neurolinguistic programming, and that is simply influencing people, including yourself. So when you're teaching the neurolinguistic programming, you can actually teach yourself, teach your managers, to teach your new hires all the way up and down the food chain of how to indoctrinate that confidence into everything they do and everything they say, to where you're persuading everyone at all times about all things, including that company culture. A lot of times, and I haven't done this in years, but one of the prolific stories around here was to launch a contest. I jumped out of the ceiling in full combat gear because we were going to play cards, the game of war. Well, I hadn't done that. Probably been about 40 pounds ago, and I like my ankles a little too much to do that again. But we do other silly and fun things like that to try to keep people amped up. LaDonna, I know, uses a lot of sound effects when she's doing training, and I think that they're just spot on. They're wonderful. And if you do any, just a little bit of reading on persuasion and the power of neurolinguistic programming, you can take two or three little line items and indoctrinate them into your training that will make all kinds of a difference when you're teaching persuasion and then on into negotiation. So I just wanted to add that, and I wanted to apologize for my delinquency in getting in the call.
We're glad you're here, Roger.
We'll collect later, Roger.
Thanks,
guys. So let me ask you, Roger, we'll ask you, because we haven't had a chance to directly ask you a question yet. How much time should new employees spend training before kind of being sort of, you know, tossed out of the nest and allowed to work on their own?
I would say at least 15, 20 minutes. A lot of that's going to depend on, Mike alluded to, or Mike made the statement earlier about the technical aspects of it. So I'm going to break it in half again, the art and the science. You have to learn the systems that you have to use, a collection software. You have to use a dialer application. You have to know how to use the phones, and then you have to know how to talk and spin pencils with plates on top of it at the same time. So I will tell you kind of how we do it. Is we have our guys in the training room for right at a week, and we go over compliance. But all the times that we're indoctrinating the compliance and the compliance management system, we're also building on the core elements of how we want them to act and how we want them to treat people. Because I don't believe there is a separation between compliance and operations. I think they have to be merged together so you can be effective and you can be compliant. So to me, that takes about a week. And then maybe on that Friday, to amp them up a little bit, we'll bring them out on the floor and let them do some side-by-sides with the collectors. We have a mentor program going on here or in our office. And when they're being mentored, they're starting to learn the systems, and the ones that are seem to be catching on and don't look like a deer in headlights, we let do some typing while the collector talks. And then as that progresses into the following week and we're teaching the different codes in the system and the different screens of the system, we're always reinforcing the compliance. We're always reinforcing the psychology and the art of collecting the debt, not only what to say, but how to say what to say. And then we move to where the mentor is sitting there simply coaching the person while they are making the calls and doing the typing steps. So I don't see it taking any less than 2 weeks, depending on the complexity of what you've got to teach people. And if you're in something extremely complicated, like say student loans, you might be looking at 4 weeks before they ever really pick up a phone.
Yeah. And Roger, we're pretty much on the same page. We do a basic 2 week initial training, and the first week is more of a classroom environment, you know, learning about the regulators and the laws and those types of things, and, you know, how to talk with consumers. And then that second week, is they're actually, you know, learning how the systems talk to each other, and the trainer at that point is pointing things out, you know, pointing out some of the compliance features on the software and prompting them to remember, you know, about what you can or cannot do in this particular state, and brings everything together. We also let them meet with our quality assurance team, because it seems like sometimes when the collectors, you know, the reps actually get on the floor, then they start hearing, you know, the quality assurance department. So we bring quality assurance in early, introduce themselves and tell them, you know, what they do. And then they'll go through the scorecard, and then, you know, the trainer's in there too and saying, this is what we cover in this area. And you remember that this law says that. And so by the end of the 2 weeks, they have a good understanding of what the job is supposed to be and what their expectations are. And basically on day one, we give them a full outline of what to expect over the next 2 weeks. And we pretty much stick to that outline, you know, barring any real, you know, technical issues or problems. But I think the staff are more receptive when they know what's coming up the next day or that afternoon, and they kind of prepare for those things mentally.
If I
yeah,
can
so this,
in, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I'll jump in. Thanks. So, you know, I was a guest speaker on another training and development webinar a couple of years back, and it's a great question. And we were asked the same question on that particular venue. And one of my co-panelists said that their answer was 13 weeks. And I thought, wow, that's really long and costly. And, you know, you could serve your country in combat with less experience. So, you know, our training is similar. You know, they're on the phones between the second and third week, you know, after we have a little internal comprehensive exam that they take. But, you know, we're doing a lot of the same things at the beginning. You know, week one is in the classroom. We're listening to recorded calls and going over the laws. And then, you know, we move into the call shadowing and side-by-sides and guided practice and a lot of debriefing. You know, I think debriefing is tantamount to someone who's new, especially if they don't have a lot of experience, to really ramp up that learning curve.
Okay. You mentioned exams. So how many tests, you know, of their knowledge do you give them while they're in training? Because here we do FDCPA, we do FCRA, then we do a comprehensive exam that also covers soft skills as well. What about y'all? What do y'all do?
If I could, real quick, that's what I wanted to add to this. And yeah, I'm going to stump for our great sponsor and good friend of mine, Chris Rickman here. We use the Knowledge Link product. And not only do we have our compliance and our effectivity test on built into Knowledge Link now, we also have our handbook put into Knowledge Link, where one of the very first things that the new hire does is goes through our handbook, and they read and acknowledge that they understand and have no questions about each policy. And that's already built in, so we can do that on an annual basis. But we do a lot of quizzing in that first month even. We bring people back in for little lunch and learns and things. And the reason we do that is to gauge what they're learning and retaining and to build their confidence that they've got this as they go.
What about you, Mike? What do y'all do for testing?
Yeah, it's pretty similar. You know, you've got to have the technical wherewithal to know what not to say, right? And then really what to say and how to negotiate the payment and all that kind of comes afterwards. But you know, the bottom line is, hey, when they get on the phone, you don't want them to fumble in a way that it's going to be costly for you. So a lot of it's pretty similar. You know, we're doing more of the legal aspects in those exams or those tests.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, when it comes to these tests, what level of proficiency are you looking for? I mean, my son is 11 and he's in sixth grade, and all of a sudden now a 90 has become a B. So I'm, back when I was in school, a 90 was an A, it's not an A plus. So I'm curious, what level of proficiency you're looking for? I mean, does it have to be 100% before they kind of move on, or is there some sort of pass fail grade that you're just looking for them to get?
Well, remember, the objective is to make sure the employee gets the information, understands the information. You know, we don't want a test score that's, you know, more or less got you. But to answer the question, you know, 90% seems to work well. 90%, you know, to me is an indicator that they got most of the information and they retained it and they understand it. You know, perhaps maybe they just missed a multiple choice or forgot to add something. So we go over every test after the tests are graded. We hand them back out and go over each question. So at the end of the day, you know, we walk away with the confidence that they know the materials. But, you know, again, 90%, you know, is a good cutoff.
Okay. And then, you know, Roger talked about the Knowledge Link platform that they use and how that kind of allows them to document the process. Is that an important component as well as sort of making sure that, you know, every step in the process, be it from the classroom to the shadowing to the side-by-sides, is all sort of documented? Mike, I'll ask you that one.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think especially with the advent of the CFPB and the continued compliance training and testing, you know, hopefully even before it was kind of mandated, but particularly now where all that continuous compliance training and testing is required, you got to have it documented. You know, if you use something, you know, like Chris has with Peak Revenue, it's an easy way to do it, right? Because it's going to be documented for you and it's consistent. But regardless of how you do it, it's got to be documented. And really, it goes back to the training program itself. You know, here's what we're going to cover, and this is how we're going to go about training. And when someone's hired, this is exactly what we do. And we go through all these things, and we document that we go through all these things. And then you get into the continued education or the retraining, and the same would apply there, regardless if you're conducting, you know, summative evaluations or formative evaluations, stay interviews, all of these things are great to use, but make sure you're documenting that you're actually using them.
Yeah. You know, one of the biggest questions we get asked with, you know, proposals that come our way when we're trying to get new businesses, a lot of our potential clients want to know, you know, what type of a training program, explain your training process, give us your training outline, and, you know, how do your staff do with testing? What's your ongoing training? So it's not only important to keep our staff in the know, but it's also good to have it for, you know, from a marketing perspective, you know, to show your clients that you are a well-run organization.
Okay. Let's move on. We've talked about new hires, and we're getting close to the top of the hour. So let's move on to the other topic that I wanted to spend some time on. And Roger, you brought this up, so I'll ask this to you. You said you bring employees back for lunch and learns. Let's talk about continuing education. So how often do you or should employees be brought back in for continuing education or retraining?
So the way that I do that is it depends on the topic. We do annual compliance security testing. We do the annual review of the ACA's ethics review and code of conduct. And then we do annual HIPAA retraining also. And then one of the conditions for ongoing employment is after 6 months of employment here, they have to earn their PCS through ACA. So they have to become a certified collector through ACA. But just in general, we do, in fact, at 2 o'clock Central Time today, we've got a company meeting where we'll go over a few training points too. And these are just highlight points and reinforcement points. Yesterday, I had a brief meeting about, after morning prime time, in my opinion, so about 10:30 or so, I had another one. And then we'll have more formal meetings about once a month or so with a group of identified employees that we feel would benefit from it. We'll bring small groups in rather than having a full floor or large group meeting. So it really depends on the expectation of what we want to see and where we're getting the information. A few months ago or a couple months ago, we started using a call analytics product, and it's proven invaluable on just the opportunities that we have. It's shown us that, hey, we're doing a pretty good job on compliance, but it's also giving us great training topics to improve performance. So it really depends on the topic and what we're wanting to extract from it.
Yeah. Yes, just like Roger, we have some things that are done, you know, annually, semi-annually, you know, FDCPA refreshers, HIPAA, but we also use our quality assurance and compliance scorecards to look for trends, you know, throughout the agency where there's some opportunities to, you know, provide some enhanced training. And if we have staff, floundering in certain areas and such. So, our training is always ongoing. And then there's the informal training. You know, our supervisors, you know, are on the floor. You know, we call them, you know, they may have to educate and motivate, and those are verbs, and which means they're out doing it live. And then we rely on our supervisors to give training, the training department, the quality assurance department, you know, feedback on what they're hearing and seeing out there on the floor. We haven't got to the call analytics yet, but that's on my wish list. But I did want to add that upper management has to buy into the importance of training and where money is spent. You know, because when I look at our budget every year, it seems like training gets the least amount of money, and it's almost like our budgets are never static. And training is the area that gets the last area that's considered for an increase. And it seems like training, budgets get cut first if there's budgetary cuts. So getting, upper management, buy into the importance of training and using some of the great resources that are out there, whether they're web-based, offered through an industry alliance, that's just critical to what we do.
Mike, let me ask you, what do you view, or how do you view the optimal way to set up a continuing education program? Do you bring back everybody for continuing education?
Yeah, so kind of the big picture, what we do, and this will speak to your prior question a little bit as well, but we've got our annual collector exam, we've got our annual stay interview, which is stay interview is a great way to learn and to teach, with turnover being ubiquitous in the collection industry and how costly it is, it's a great way to really, pick the minds of your employees. And then we do, our monthly compliance meeting, which is mandatory, so legal refreshers, et cetera. But then we also have voluntary training sessions. So we'll have biweekly best practice roundtables where anybody wants to show up at 7 a.m, we'll pay you to be here. We'll pay you to learn, an hour before we can get on the phones. And then we have voluntary weekly call reviews too, where we'll pick some calls or have people volunteer to send us some calls that they think, hey, I have no reason to believe that this would have been collected at the beginning of the call and I collected it, you got to hear it, or vice versa. I think I should have been able to collect it and I want to glean something from this, and we'll listen to the whole call, both sides of the phone, and round table it. But again, that's a voluntary thing. And I tell you what, you really learn a lot about the people that show up at those early morning or those meetings that you do over lunch when they don't have to be there. And then our collection managers are licensed through the state. So they take the state exam and they get licensed. But we do have the voluntary and as well as the, required meetings. But I'll say with regards to, the optimal way to set up a continuous training program, I'll echo a little bit of what LaDonna said is, our managers are working managers. Fortunate enough for us, based on our size and scope, and they're out there on the floor every day with the collectors. And really, that's where it starts, because number one, what all the great trainers and great managers and great coaches in my mind have in common is they're good at building relationships. And you're not going to build a relationship if you're sitting in some corner office and you're not out there in the trenches with the collectors, and you're not going to know who's your next up and comers and who should be promoted, short of looking at the numbers, But also, there's another facet to this ongoing and continuous training, and that is motivation. And I'll lean on good old Zig Ziglar again, and he said that people tell us motivation doesn't last. Well, neither does bathing, so we recommend it daily. Well, we recommend training daily, And really what it is just basic psychology. It's reinforcement. Are you reinforcing those good behaviors, and are you nipping the things in the bud that can turn into comments that you really don't want to hear when you run your data analytics or when you review complaint calls? But if you want, I can talk a little bit about, development for continuing education based on needs assessments. Which is something that we use, because there's collectors have been here, 12, 15 years, collectors have been here 2 years, all over the spectrum. So who really needs it? Well, everybody needs it. They may just not need the same amount of training, right? So you can do a needs assessment. It's an empirical approach to identifying gaps, you know, performance gaps, compliance gaps, whatever outcomes you want to measure, and you set priorities quite simply for future improvement. But there's a lot of great resources out there for that. You know, there's some information with SHRM, PSYOP, the Society for Industrial Organizational Psychology is a great resource if you haven't heard of that. You know, there's a lot of good correlation with KPIs and needs assessment and how to conduct those from an empirical approach.
Let me ask one quick follow-up. With regards to the voluntary training that you mentioned, what kind of participation rates? Do you get a lot of people to come? How, you know, can you give us some sense of that?
Yeah, the participation is really great, in fact. And what we see is, you know, we have somewhere between 80 and 90% participation, depending on the day, depending on, you know, the time. Is it tax time? Everyone's in the office anyway, you know, ready to go. So they're there. Is it the summer? A lot of people are on vacation. But yeah, it's 80 to 90%, which is elating to me. I absolutely love it. And the people that, what we find is the people that consistently don't attend those are the people that don't last. And that's just correlation, you know, it's not causation. But someone who, again, back to the beginning, has an eagerness to learn and they want to get better and they want to make a career out of it, you know, they're going to do everything they can to get better. And that means listening to other people's calls. That means taking other people's advice or showing up to a meeting and asking some questions, asking some tough questions sometimes, you know, what to do in particular situations or, you know, what you should have done.
Mike, I got to tell you, I resonate every syllable that you just said. We get that high degree of participation when we do something voluntary too, and it's the same people. The people who don't weed themselves out that don't participate. So yep. You could have said it better.
Yes.
You can almost put it on an egg timer.
Let me ask one last question before I get to a few from the attendees. Again, if you have any questions, we're only got a few minutes left, so please submit them now. Can you talk about sort of who's responsible for managing the training and continuing education programs and sort of where it fits, you know, maybe within the organizational chart at a collection agency? And LaDonna, I'll start with you this time.
Right. The training comes under me, and I'm actually the vice president of special operations now, and I'm responsible for client relationships and training development. And the actual training, the overseer of the program, and I take information and get feedback from all the departments, you know, so it's just not, you know, one-sided view of training. So I get feedback from everybody, and then, you know, we develop the training to make sure that we're meeting everyone's needs within the organization.
Mike, Roger, is it any different at your shops?
I have a training manager that reports up to my ops manager and then has influence or direction from the compliance manager also. The compliance manager doesn't report to the ops manager, but the training manager does. So it's similar to LaDonna's food chain.
And then, Mike, my shop is smaller from the sounds of it, 40 to 50 collectors, so on the size and scope spectrum. But our trainers and supervisors, what we call work team leads, and then our managers, they all have their hands in the training program. So that would be our training team. And obviously, you know, the individuals on the trainers themselves and work team leaders are, you know, more heavily involved, and then the managers get involved later on in the process. They do have all their hands are in it. But again, it goes back to what we were saying about, you know, who makes the best trainers, and it's the individuals who are great communicators, and they realize that, you know, building relationships is really where it stems from.
God. Okay, let's get to a few questions here before we run out of time. How many times do you allow employees to retake the FDCPA or FDRA test if they fail?
Once. And we use that rule because our training is so good. If they fail it a second time, then they're truly not going to be a good fit.
Amen.
Okay. What do you see as the most difficult, meaning takes the longest amount of time to show proficiency, as the most difficult skill set to train a new hire that does not have any prior collection experience?
Creating a dialogue with the consumer, the ease of doing that, you know, because they can remember the laws and remember everything, but putting it all together to have an effective dialogue talk oftentimes is the most difficult.
And Mike, I would say from what I hear, more than that from the managers is training people how not to believe everything they hear. I think we're just wired to believe, you know, what people say. And so kind of some untraining is the most challenging part of training, if you will.
Yeah.
From my perspective, it would probably be file management. While maintaining a dialogue or effective dialogue without reading back the past, you know, we have a lot of physicians business, so we get a lot of frequent flyers that have had 10 or 20 conversations over the years with the office, and some of the new people want to revisit, you know, this is your life kind of scenario. So getting them to keep it brief while staying effective.
Let's see here, one or two more questions. Do you do regulatory FDCPA testing in sections or all at once?
We do all at once.
We do too.
Yep, all at once.
Okay. Maybe here, let's make this the last question. What tips do you have for getting trainers excited about training?
Well, let's go back to Mike's Zig Ziglar thing. You know, it's about motivation. And, you know, trainers got to love their job and they got to want to train. That's my opinion.
Yeah, hire the right trainers.
Yeah. I agree. If you're having to spend a lot of time deliberating on how to motivate your trainers, you might need to spend that time looking for a different trainer. One thing going back to the previous question that you asked real quick, Mike, and I'm going to stump for our sponsor again here. One of the great things about Knowledge Link is you can break up categories of questions where they are receiving at your discretion, you know, maybe one or two questions a day or two or three questions a week under different categories. So that lends to a very easy and manageable eat an elephant, so to say, which is one bite or small bites at a time.
That's a good point, and it creates dialogue with your staff. You know, when the collector's right on the floor, they're like, what questions did you get today? Well, I had this one, and how did you answer it? So it gets them talking amongst each other about what you want them to talk about.
Well, I promised the speakers that I wouldn't go much more than an hour, and I'm a couple of minutes over. So I'm going to call it there. If you did submit a question, I apologize if I didn't get to it. I will try and take the questions that have been asked that I did get answers for and send them over to the panelists. And if they can find a few minutes in the next few days, they will get some answers and I'll send them back. But before I let everyone go, I wanted to thank LaDonna, Mike, and Roger again for their insights and time today. This was a great conversation. You know, I've got a lot of notes and this webinar definitely would not have been possible without their participation. I also want to thank Chris Rickman and Peak Revenue Group for sponsoring today's webinar. Thanks for your support. And thank you to everyone who participated in today's webinar. We had the most registrations of any event that we've had this year. So I think that's a great testament to the topic and the speakers. And thank you to everybody who participated. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars, including a recording of this event, which will be made available in the next day or so in the very near future. Be sure to enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Been a pleasure.
Bye now.
Thank you.